Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com.
Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for growing your faith. Good News Ministries will provide you with faith-building reflections, virtual retreats, prayer resources, and lots more. All of it is free. Visit GNM.org today.
Welcome to the Catholic Command Show. On the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Possibly a coffee mug, depending on where you are in the world listening. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, I'm sure. Every once in a while, we go off the beaten path of the typical Catholic Man Show to be able to dive into specific topics that ultimately Dave and I really care about. That's really what it boils down to.
Ultimately, it is about us.
It's our show, so we get to pick.
Yeah, exactly. And you're welcome for watching.
we've had ones on Whiskey 101. We've had ones on Cigar 101s. We've done a Forging 101.
Yeah.
There's others, though.
And when we did the forging, I learned some new words, like bladesmithery. That's a pretty sweet word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're all going to learn some new words today.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I've already learned a couple, and we'll get to them. I don't want to jump the gun.
Including the stretchiness of that word smithery.
Yeah.
Stretches to a lot of things.
Yes. That's what I realized after. It's like, what? You can just say blade smithery? Like, yeah.
You can just throw smithery?
You can just, put that at the end of stuff.
That's right.
Like
be a wordsmith.
Yes, well, I practice pancake smithery. I craft pancakes.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Why don't you introduce our guest?
Okay, so we have here in studio, Mr. Brandon Sheard of Farmstead...
Meatsmith.
That's it.
From Washington State.
Yes.
Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you are Catholic. You converted. If your people are interested in seeing that, it's... What show was it?
It's Marcus Grodice. What was it?
Marcus Grodice, The Journey Home.
That's right.
Journey Home.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So you did a great episode with him.
That was fun.
Yeah. So you have a cool conversion story, A. So that's, something neat.
What's B?
God made it look really cool after... I got out of the way.
Yeah, conversion stories, they're
hindsight.
They're kind of only cool when you look back at them.
Yeah, right.
When you're in the midst of them, it's the worst, actually.
Because you're having to give up things that you don't want to give up.
Right. It's just like you're dealing with existential crises.
Right. I might be wrong about everything.
Everything.
My whole perception of reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, Jim Carrey might be right about all of it. I don't know yet.
But Brandon, you also have a podcast. I've had a chance to listen to some of those episodes. Why don't you tell them about your podcast just a little bit?
Thank you. Yeah, it's... now I have to remember the name of my own podcast. Yeah, my wife and I sit down and we record, a couple a month. And it's the Meatsmith Household. You can also look it up just on iTunes under Farmstead Meatsmith. And we kind of cover what it has been, our journey to make a lot of our own food and eat it and feed lots of children therewith.
It. Yes. It's called the Meatsmith Harvest.
There it is.
The Meatsmith Harvest is what it's called.
I'm sorry, Lauren.
But that's what it's called. That's what
Lauren is my wife.
You can look that up on iTunes. But yeah, so you go through basically how to do it. You basically process it. It's really cool how you integrate both being able to provide for your family in a real sense from farm to table.
Yeah.
But you also integrate your faith in the process, mm-hmm. right? I mean, your lovely wife does that quite a bit as
yeah.
well.
We can't help it. It's so we'd have to self-edit,
right,
in order to not do that. And a lot of it is trying to figure out the older traditions of how did people do this on a domestic scale? Because mm-hmm. that's sort of what we don't get a lot of anymore is, we got the industrial scale down.
Right.
We can do a lot of animals at once. But what mm-hmm. what like if it's just your backyard and you just want to smoke some hams. What do you do then?
Yeah.
And come to find out, there's centuries of people doing exactly that very well. So,
I mean, because that is a good question. It's like, are you going to tell us?
Do it.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, there's so many questions I have.
So tomorrow we're doing something very awesome.
Yes.
We're going
pumped.
To Dr. Malosh's house to kill, eviscerate,
yeah,
butcher, and eat.
Split.
Are we going to cook it and eat it tomorrow?
Yes. We're going to eat some offal. Yeah.
See, I don't know what that is, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah.
But I went to his house a couple months ago, and it was really one of my first experiences of being on a small farm.
Mm-hmm.
Not something huge where you have a machine taking care of this and, you know, where each animal would be its own,
yeah,
like line, but a small farm. And I was fascinated to see how it almost took care of itself in many ways. Mm-hmm. They have since sold their milk cow, but they had a, yeah, cow, and the cow, aside from providing them milk, also fed the pig.
Yeah.
And they would...
It's a circle of life.
Right.
It's a circle.
Because it's a circle.
Yeah. That's right. I remember The Lion King.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Just like that movie.
I know.
But anyway, it was just very, very cool and eye-opening because, yeah, I didn't know that. I've always wondered, is it really cheaper to raise your own pig? Because pork is...
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty cheap, really.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, but if you don't have to actually spend any money on it, it's just costing you labor.
Yeah. Labor, and you buy the feed. And ultimately, like, it's, you know, it's a quality of life thing.
Uh-huh.
Before it is a quantitative gain in the pocketbook.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's...
Yeah, because, yeah, we had Dr. Cutterback on mm-hmm. not too long ago, and we were talking to him about family life in general, and he was saying some of the best moments he's had with his son,
yeah,
was butchering a pig. He said those were the times where he had, like, you got electronics away, you were able to just one-on-one with your son, and there were just natural moments of being able to talk about meaningful stuff in life.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I mean, working together... will do that, you know, because your body is engaged and your mind is sort of liberated to converse,
mm-hmm,
to go on. Yeah.
So is butchering a pig, is it hard? Is it something, and I don't mean to be sexist, but is it, yeah, something that a woman could easily do, or?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I would say that it is, it is hard, but it is not complex.
Okay.
So,
but it doesn't take a lot of physical strength.
Right.
Maybe just more of a sharp knife.
If you have, it is nice to have the assist of some carcass moving apparatus, because,
okay,
there is a huge difference between what the weight is on the scale and this thing we call dead weight.
Right.
Like, the dead weight of a body is, it is so heavy and awkward and difficult to move.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you see, well, maybe you don't, but in old school butcher shops, they use vertical space. Everything is on trolleys and rails. Because then if you need to move a carcass, you can use your legs, your thighs.
And push it.
Yeah. You know, none of this stuff.
To the back.
Like, bend down, yeah, and lift it up off the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you can manage that little part, you know, then it is very manageable and anybody can do it.
Okay. So let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
That's a good place to start.
It is a very good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They should write a song about that. How did you get into meat smithery?
Yeah.
Butchering? Did your dad do it? Did you learn it from him? Did you watch YouTube?
No, it should give people... I watched YouTube.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
No,
absolutely.
Kidding. I was kidding.
No.
But that's hilarious.
That's it. The University of YouTube. Yeah. Yeah. People should be encouraged. I mean, I grew up in Southern California, suburbia,
okay,
completely. And moved to the Pacific Northwest. My wife and I were academics 100%. We were just going to go from college and PhD to teaching at universities.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of the goal. And midway through that process, we got sort of, you know, revolted by the academic scene, a little repelled from it.
Yeah.
You know, writing for the fadistic journals on the fed topics and not really good meaty content.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to do something real, you know, that category of things.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
Tangible.
Yeah. And literally not any more defined than that. And it could have been anything. And so we moved to Vashon Island, and this is right after we were married.
And it sounds nice. That sounds nice. I don't know what that is, but it...
Oh, Vashon Island. That is the place we live on. 'Tis a rock in the Puget Sound, 13 miles long, 4 wide. We live on the south end of it.
The names of other places are much more romantic than they are here in Oklahoma.
I don't know, dude. Chickasaw. and Shakota?
Shakota, yeah. I mean, and Shoto?
Yeah, Shoto.
Yeah.
Broken Arrow?
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Can we fix the arrow?
I don't know.
But Puget Sound and the name of that, it's like, wow, that sounds lovely.
Vashon. It is lovely. Mm-hmm. I live in a lovely place.
That's very awesome.
Grateful. Yeah. We went to this lovely place, and I was looking for real work, you know, in Vashon Town, which has like 11 businesses.
Okay.
And one of them was a butcher shop that had opened the day prior. And I walked in. Yeah.
So they were hiring.
Well, not really, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it was just the coolest thing going. Uh-huh. And I had worked at Whole Foods. And so one thing I knew about was wine.
Okay.
On account of spending my paycheck on wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At Whole Foods, because they have quite a nice wine selection.
Whoa. Turns out our bumper music decided to... Sorry about that.
Sorry.
There.
Some sound effects.
Fixed.
Yeah.
I fixed it.
Sorry about that. Continue.
No. Yeah. So we were... walked in. I saw not only was it a butcher shop, but he was making his own wine. And I still do some work for him to this day, actually.
Okay.
Making his own wine. And they were making their own cheese. And they were selling lamb and pork. It's just incredibly diversified. And it was all from his farm on the north end of the island.
Hmm.
And so I essentially thought, this is really awesome. I would like to know how to do all of this for my people, for my family.
Because this is all real.
Yeah, it's all real.
You made something.
Yeah, I made it. Look at it. There it is.
Yeah.
That's how simple our affections are coming out of, you know, just kind of the suburban isolation from all those real things.
Yeah.
It's just really... Yeah, interesting. But, so, I basically started, I showed up for work every day for 2 weeks, and then he started paying me. Just kind of...
That was a bold move on your part.
Yeah, especially newly married. I don't think I'm that bold anymore.
Yeah.
But, anyway, made it work. And I worked there for exactly 2 years and learned everything by doing it.
Uh-huh.
So, there was no training. It's a small business. Like, there were very few of us. It's not like, here's our training program.
Right.
Right.
This is... Shoot pig here.
Like, watch this video.
Yeah, none of that. It was figure it out. And what really broke through for me was the final cause of it all, which was the meal. And so when I actually started eating the things that we were creating, then I understood all the things that we were creating and how to do it. Because you just got to get that telos. Like, you got to get the end in view.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an epiphanous moment for me when I discovered that it's just flavor, you know, like trying the bacon that we were making for the first time was like, no, we don't. How come I've never had this before? This is bacon? That other stuff? I don't know what that was that I've been eating my whole life, but it's not this.
Mm-hmm.
My mouth is watering.
Yeah.
We're doing this on a Friday. It's just complete minutes. We're talking about bacon.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, so you figure it out. You figure out. So how do you do it? How do you decide, though, this is what I'm going to do? Like, so you went from I'm working for another guy, and now there has to be a pretty big leap.
Yeah.
Or another step, at least.
Kind of. I mean, both my parents were had their own businesses growing up.
Hmm.
So I don't know what it's like to work for someone else, really.
Okay.
The only path I know is kind of like stare into the void and like scratch money out of it. Which is kind of what I feel like small businesses are.
That's a good talent to have. I mean, if you can do that.
Yeah, if you can survive, yes. And we started having children, which, as you might know, can change some things.
That's a motivating factor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You never felt so like, I have got to work harder. What have I been doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was our second son. When John Luke came along, it was like, maybe I can't work 17 hours a day at this other farm. Because there's a lot to do. There were four of us, maybe five sometimes. And we were milking 7 cows, making cheese, making wine, slaughtering 50 chickens, slaughtering 3 or 4. sheep, two pigs every week, and selling it fresh at the Seattle farmers markets on the weekends. So just incredibly dense schedule and a great way to learn all the things.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was when we stopped doing that, that I was, you know, I was content to just go on and work for other contractors. We'll do some building over here, some excavating. I'll build some caskets at my friend's wonderful casket shop, Marion Caskets.
Oh, I know that.
Yes.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, Marcus Daly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been, he had a little special on UW2TN.
Yeah, that's where I saw it.
He's been on the journey home also.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with Marcus Grodi. But wonderful, beautiful, simple, humble caskets.
That's what I want.
Yeah. You know, made of wood and stuff.
Yeah, like pine.
Like natural.
Pine box. Yeah. I don't need all the super fan. Anyway, this is another topic.
I have that in my will, but I have a feeling the church is going to really want me to be encased in gold and stuff.
Well, I don't know.
So,
it'll take a while. We've done a lot of episodes. You're going to have to listen to all this.
Yeah, that's very humble of you to acknowledge the church's authority over you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I'm nothing but a humble servant.
Yeah.
So
I was content to do that.
Okay.
But then Lauren, actually, pregnant with a third child, said, you know, you have this skill of being able to harvest all of these animals. You need to use it. You're responsible to use it. And so I actually blame her for the Farmstead Meatsmith that we then launched. And there was, you know, an element of how do you know what your calling is in life? And it's like, well, when people are calling you and asking you to do a thing, might be your calling.
I just don't know what my calling is. Hello. Yeah. No. Yeah. I can't do that for you.
Right. I'm trying to figure out my calling.
Right.
Yeah. And there was a demand for a small scale, you know, harvest a goat here, a pig there, which is hard to fit in to the schedule of larger slaughtering operations.
So people were bringing you their animals.
I was going to them.
Okay. Okay.
So mobile, which is totally a different service. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because now do you have your own property that you...
Yes.
Okay.
But I still am mobile for the kill. So I have a truck with a crane that swings out the back and I go to the farm. It's the best. I mean, you know, farm killed meat is you're harvesting the animal on its own turf. It does not have the stress of transportation.
Right.
Or the hassle for the farmer, honestly. It is a pain to transport living animals.
Mm-hmm.
Not so hard once they're dead.
turns out.
Yeah, if you can lift them.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. That's the only part. So I go and I harvest the animals on the farm. And then I bring them back to my shop where I have a walk-in cooler to chill them. And then I can cut them, wrap them for the freezer, and cure them for the person to come pick up later.
Fascinating. Have you ever been pulled over on your way back to your shop, like with just like some dead goats in the back or something?
Yes.
What are you doing today, son?
Yeah. Yeah. I had one guy one officer, he pulled me over. He's like, do you know why I pulled you over? I'm like, actually, no, I have no idea. No idea.
Your truck is bleeding. That's why.
There's a trail of blood for the last half mile.
He just wanted to like inspect the outside. For some reason, it might have been the trail of blood that made him want to look.
Right.
There's not blood coming out of my truck. But, yeah, it's weird.
Okay, that's hilarious that that has actually happened to you.
Yeah.
But so this is what you do now full time?
Yeah, so that is one of the things. That is the service that I offer to small farmers on my island and off in my region. And then the other thing is we teach people how to do it in their backyard because where all of the best things came from, like all of the really amazing European foods that we love, like prosciutto, pancetta, lomo alone. So, you know, all the salami, that stuff came from the domestic kitchen. That's where it originated from. And which means to me, hey, we should be able to do that. Being humans, like the humans that came before us, in our kitchen and stuff, not with like, you know, the perfectly sterilized clean rooms and 1,000 pigs at a time. Like this should actually be simple enough to fit in our brains and we could feed ourselves this way.
Right.
Because it does taste so much better, like beyond. You can make a prosciutto in your home that will taste better than anything you can purchase.
Mm.
I promise.
Yeah, because people were doing this before the internet.
Yeah.
You know? Like, obviously, something that you can just know how to do and do it.
Yeah, it's very simple. And it is the prowess of of the home cook, really. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of education that we offer to equip the domestic kitchen to do that. We have the Meatsmith membership, where I put online content online to a group of people making videos every month on how to do it. We've got forums and private Facebook group and everything. Mm-hmm. And then the classes we host at our farm, at our property, which are like 3 day. We're kind of cramming it into 1 day tomorrow, but we'll do 3 days where we slaughter two pigs 1 day, butcher them the next, and then cure and cook them the third day. And people go home from that and they're like, yeah, I can do this. And they do.
So when you say slaughtering a pig, what is involved in that other than killing it?
Yeah.
Probably so, draining it, right? I mean,
yeah, get the blood out. So first step is the kill, and you shoot them in the brain.
Okay.
Anything less than the brain will not kill the pig. And then they drop and you bleed them out by cutting the carotid arteries with your knife. Because their heart is still beating.
Right.
You can do ear to ear. If you want to be subtle about it and actually catch the blood, then you just make a jab. It's just an incision. I'll show you tomorrow.
Okay.
And then you'll get a stream into which it will flow into a bowl.
And you want to catch the blood.
If one would like to eat the blood. I'm going to show you how to catch blood tomorrow. Yeah.
Are we going to make blood sausage?
We probably won't have time, but I am going to show you how to catch it so you can. Basically, what you do is the blood's flowing into the bowl. You put your hand in it and you stir the blood.
Just mix it up?
Mixing it. And you're preventing it from turning it into a giant scab because it just wants to coagulate immediately upon being exposed to air.
Sure.
And then you'll just have a big useless blood cake. And so you want to stir it, and the coagulating platelets will cling to your hands, and you can whip those off your hand and get them out of there, and then it will stay liquefied. And then you can strain that, and then what you have cooks exactly the same way that whisked eggs cook.
No kidding.
So if you can cook eggs, you can cook blood, because it has the albumin protein. So when you cook it, it solidifies. That's why they call blood pudding. You know, it's got this egg base that binds and makes it solid.
I can't figure out why people don't want to just do this in their, you know, once like when you're talking about stirring the blood.
Yeah.
You just fling it right off, you know. It's like, once you do it, I'm sure it's like, that's no big deal.
Yeah.
But there are people at who would hear that and say, no, I'm not going to do that, you know, which is good for you.
It doesn't take much. The hand of little employment hath the daintier sense, Hamlet says.
Mm.
So the more you do it, the less dainty your senses become.
Sure.
And it's not like that's a good thing. I just realized this. It's not like you're numbing. You're not becoming numb to it. That's actually a myth. Like
you're coming to know it more.
Exactly. You're not becoming numb to the kill or numb to the smell, you know, or numb to the feeling of the guts or whatever. Not at all. You're actually refining, becoming more attuned to it, such that you are much better able to detect something that is actually putrefying or something that is just aging, right? Just by aroma. Like you get, your senses are becoming disciplined and more trained the more you do it.
Yeah. And you also realize this is not going to hurt you.
Yeah, right.
You're actually going to be just fine.
Yeah, builds confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so are we going to go through how to do a pig, or do we want to go other places?
Yeah, well, that was just step two.
That was step two.
Yeah, I mean, let's
keep going.
Okay. Keep going.
All right, I'll try to. We'll get through it. So then, if you're going to actually receive the full bounty that is a pig, you need to scald it and scrape it rather than skin it. On account of the fact that a pig does not have a hide like a deer or a rabbit, where you can find a seam and then pull, pig has an epidermis. It has skin like we do. They get freckles, sunburns, and it is delicious.
They actually use pig skin like for skin transplant sometimes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. My wife almost got some pig skin on her ankle one time, and I was all excited about it. I had all these new nicknames picked out for her. And then they ended up not needing to do it. And I was a little sad.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. And the only way you're going to get that is if you scald and scrape your pigs.
Okay.
And which means you have to dip them in water that is exactly 147 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
And count to 90 and then hoist it out a little bit. And I do this in a 55-gallon drum. Tug on the hair. If it should slip off effortlessly. If it doesn't, go back in for another 90. But you got to keep it at 147 Fahrenheit. Okay. That's
the magic number.
Yeah. I mean, technically it's 145, but I'm telling you 147 because if you check the temp and then you lower the pig in, he's going to drop it a couple degrees to 145. And that is, you're not boiling worse. It's like specifically a scald to loosen the hair follicles. And so then you scrape off the hair and the top layer of skin. So a black pig or a red pig will have white skin beneath.
No kidding.
And that's that's the dermis that remains, and you're scraping that off.
Wow.
And you'll see I regard scalding and scraping a pig as a very high art form. It's tricky. It is the epitome of carving the backside of a pillar that nobody's going to see. It's just this thing. It takes a lot of work. You have to be precise the whole time, and it is so gratifying when you get it. And anybody can do it. I always like to put that on the back there. But so that's the scald and scrape. And that makes the entire harvest of the pig available to you. When you skin a pig, you remove most of the fat. It's just gone because there is no seam between hide and flesh.
Okay. So what could possibly, if it's an art form.
Yes.
And you're scraping this pig. If someone was like a newbie, if I was just going to go in and add it, what mistake would I make?
Only one. There's just one mistake that everybody makes.
Going too deep? Or
they do not pay attention to the thermometer. Like, you really have to be a temperature-obsessed person.
Okay.
Make sure your thermometer is calibrated. It's usually that the water is too hot or too cold. Both are bad. It's not like, oh, if it's hotter, it'll happen faster. It's like, right. No.
It's not how it works.
It's real bad. It'll melt the underlayer of skin and affix the hair to it. And so when you go to scrape it, the hair is not coming off. So you got to press harder, but the backing is now softened and slightly cooked. So you're taking chunks of fat out.
You don't want that.
Yeah, gives me anxiety just to talk about it. So,
if you get the temperature right, it's easy to do. It just comes right off.
Yeah, okay. You know, it still work. You'll have tennis elbow at the end of the day because you're scraping it with this thing called.
But it's just
hog scraper.
Like scrape. Just use the scraper.
That's right.
Okay,
it should slip right off. Then you hang them from their back legs, and you open up the front end, and you're going to pull all the guts out.
Similar to a deer.
Yes. And if it's actually a little easier because a deer has way more guts, being a ruminant, than a pig. Pig is a small little gut package. And that's evisceration is where you pull all that out. And then you can split the pig down the middle just with a bone saw, handheld, and put it in a cool place. And go to bed.
You mean like a refrigerator?
A refrigerator is nice. Winter also works. You know, if a refrigerator is only, 35 degrees, and it's not uncommon for that to happen at night, in the northern hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And so you can just hoist it higher up in the tree that you're hanging it from and go to bed. And it'll chill all night. And then the next day you can get back to bring them down, portioning the carcass, cutting it up. Setting aside to it and putting a lot of it on the salt, I would hope, which is to cure it.
Okay.
And that's where the bacon and the ham comes in.
And so is that all part of the slaughtering process? This is all, have we moved into butchering?
We did. I just tipped in. So slaughtering is that first day process where you get to splitting the pig in half. That pig is slaughtered.
After it's cut in half or before it's cut in half?
Well,
either way.
Yeah. It's a little bit of butchery on the slaughter day, I guess. Cutting it in half. And then it changes from coast to coast. Like, butchers on the East Coast, when they say the word butcher, they mean what I would say is slaughter. So it's kind of got this arbitrary.
Yeah, because that's kind of how I've heard. It's like, oh, I'm going to go butcher that cow.
Right.
And I guess the slaughtering is obviously you're going to slaughter it if you're going to butcher it. You know, you don't need to say both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the butchery is, bring it in, portion it, salt it, and cook and eat.
Okay, when we're talking about the salting part of it, let's go into that for just a second.
Yeah.
The purpose, how much, why do we do it?
Yeah, I think the most important part is why.
Right.
And traditionally there was one primary reason, and that was because you don't have a refrigerator or a freezer.
Yeah.
So you are not just flavoring the meat, you are preserving it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I love about curing traditionally is that when you are pursuing that utilitarian end, like, hey, let's not starve in the next 2 months of this really cold winter.
Yeah.
That would be good. Super utilitarian.
I'm on board. I'm on board. Yeah.
Right?
I'm pro this.
Yeah. Pro living.
Yes.
That is actually what generates the most delicious culinary creations from a pig that you can imagine. That is where, that is still today how the best prosciutto is made.
Hmm.
It is preserved. With salt, like the jamón ibérico, which is a Spanish ham, and it's aged for 3 years, not in temperature-controlled environments. Some of them are, but the temperature control is like, open a window, shut a window, right? It's very simple, just cured with salt, and it is the best ham in the world.
See, I didn't know ham could just hang out for that long.
Yeah, that's the
salt,
idea.
Salt, yeah.
Well, right, yeah, but...
Yeah, so what
you... That's incredible.
Yeah. It's have like magic,
aged,
right?
Have they aged ham in bourbon barrels? This is a legitimate question.
That is a legitimate question.
They've salted it in bourbon barrels, for sure. Barrels were a very common way to, you know, you put the salt in, put the meat in, put the salt in the barrel.
Because, you know, everything is better when it's aged in a bourbon barrel.
Right.
I'm actually aging my own children in bourbon barrels right now.
Oh, nice. They'll smell nice and sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. More complex... More complexity, yeah, in general.
Right.
We'll see how it goes.
Let's see.
Okay, so you're salting this.
Yes.
You're salting the pig.
So that's one of the ends of salting is preservation. And it so happens, because God is benevolent, that when you do that,
it's like you did it on purpose.
Extravagantly delicious. Like maybe we're designed to think it's delicious, right? So that's what's fun about this. This is the perfect marriage of thrift and extravagance. In one thing, like we're not compromising, you know, like Catholicism does sometimes. We're not like making a false dichotomy.
Right.
It's not fallacious at all.
Mm-mm. Don't make dichotomous ham. But so, yeah. And basically the way the curing works is you're putting salt on flesh, and the thing in the flesh that wants to make it spoil and rot. Yes, there is some bacteria there, but it is really water that enables the bacteria to commit dalliance and create stinky, nasty toxins and off-gassing that will make you sick. It needs water to do that.
Okay.
Water is the medium in which the bacteria, or the cavilling beasties, will do that. So if you remove or bind the water, not going to happen. And that's what salt does to the water that's in the meat. When the salt comes in contact with the cell wall of the meat, the water inside the cell seeks a balance with the salt outside, so it actually goes out to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're pulling water out, and then some of that water goes back into the meat, but it brings with it, the molecules bring little salt ions, which bind that molecule. It's like, no bacteria can use this water now.
It's my water.
It belongs to the salt. Yeah. So that is the... That is the effective part of curing. That is what preserves it.
So can you just go get a pork chop, take it home, just cover it in salt, and leave it on your counter for a year?
Yes, you could do that.
And then you could cook it a year later, and it would be fine.
What you'd probably have is salt pork. So there's many degrees of subtlety and deliciousness that we could get into.
Okay.
If you just want it to not rot, then you just pack it in solid salt. It's salt pork,
okay.
Which means it is very salty.
Yeah.
All the water in the meat has been replaced with salt, essentially.
Okay.
And that's why it lasts on ships that are out to sea in all kinds of weather. And the only way you can really palatize that, eat it, and enjoy it is you got to get the salt out. And so you soak it in fresh water, and you reverse the osmosis that put the salt in.
Hmm.
And you could just soak it in fresh water, or it could be a boil. You know, you're simmering it. And so you're kind of cooking it and pulling salt out simultaneously. And that's just like bare survival, you know, salt pork style.
Mm-hmm.
But all the recipes for all the different cuts, if you're going to cure like the jowl, the belly for bacon, the copa from the shoulder, the leg, the ham, they're all the same recipe. It's just different parts. It's just learning how much salt to add to each thing and how long to leave it on the salt.
Okay.
That's the only subtlety to this whole art, which could really be distilled to don't oversalt. that is the only, that's the temptation that is going to be the easiest thing to do.
But don't undersalt either, right?
Right, yeah. And here's the other thing. Fortunately, if you undersalt and the meat goes off, like, you know, define the worst case scenario, whatever that is, everyone gets sick. That would be the worst case scenario. You will know. You're not going to accidentally eat a putrefied piece of bacon.
Uh-huh.
I promise. It smells flagrant. Like, you, if you get close to it, you'll gag because you have a sniffer that's telling your mouth, like, don't put that in there,
right,
moron.
Right.
Because it smells like death.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, oh, okay, I won't do that. And then I've even tried this. So I've tried to over for posterity. I have eaten a rotten ham. I could smell the ham from like 20 feet away. Okay. Real bad. It was the smell of putrefaction, you know, not just like ripe.
Yeah.
Right.
Not like a nice cheese, you know, that's kind of stinky. No, putrefied, rotted. And I was like, all right, I've been preaching about the reliability of our noses for so long. So I wanted to test it. And I took a little piece and the piece itself didn't stink. The whole ham did. And I put it in my mouth and it didn't even taste that bad. And I'm chewing away. And I could not swallow. I was really impressed at my body's like...
Would say no.
Stop, moron. Spit, you know, projectile immediately. And my body said no. I could not overcome and just like, I'll send it down, you know. I was really amazed.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so I spit it out. Huh. So there... But, you know, you don't have to do that. That's kind of crazy. But the aroma will be obvious. The only time where you can't trust smell as a absolutely reliable guide in determining the edibility of a thing is where there is an anaerobic, an oxygen-free process involved in making it. And that would just be like salami or something that you're canning, because that could have a botulate toxin, which occurs in such a small amount that you can't see it, taste it, or smell it.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're talking about whole muscle cures, and in that category is bacon, and you're just taking a slab of meat, salting, curing, there's oxygen all around the outside of the meat. There's no bacteria in the flesh that produces that toxin, because the flesh is basically sterile.
Right.
And so if it is going to go off, it is going to be aromatically obvious. It's going to bludgeon you about the face with its horrible stench, and you're not going to be able to eat it.
Okay.
Okay, so we don't have a whole lot of time left, and I want to get to smoking.
Before we do that, let me ask this.
Okay.
So if somebody was thinking, this sounds awesome, I want to do this.
Yeah.
What kind of investment would one have to make? I mean, do you need special tools? You know, what are the tools, you know?
Yeah.
You need a 22,
mm-hmm.
or you could use a gun. You need a gun.
I mean, a 22
is 22 outside the category of gun?
Well, no. Or it's like, well, I have a 45, you know, it's like, okay, that'll work.
It will.
It'd be maybe messier, but...
Yes. You might not get as much of a harvest from the head.
Yeah, and...
You might not get your head cheese.
You want the head cheese. Yeah. But, okay, so what else? You need a saw?
Yeah, a bone. They make them for a bone. It is nice to have a bone saw.
But a hacksaw works.
It kind of works, yeah. If you want to do it with any regularity, you know, like once a year, it's nice to upgrade to just get yourself a bone saw.
Okay, so you maybe get a bone saw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sharp knife, item number one. Sharpness is absolutely, don't even pretend to cut with a dull knife.
What do you do to get your knife sharp? Do you use a grinder?
No, I use a coarse stone and a fine stone. I follow the Japanese method because I think the Japanese...
They were pretty good about sharp blades.
Figured it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As far as sharpness goes, like dogma. It's determined. We're done. Japanese got it. So I would... I use a DVD that I sell on my website that you can also buy from the guy that makes it, but I literally adhere to his method perfectly. I'm pretty sure I'm his best student. And it's CarterCutlery.com. And
how long does it take to sharpen a knife?
It depends on how thick it is. So when I shop for a knife, I get high carbon steel antique knives, and you don't want the dimension of the blade to be really thick. You want it to be thin, because acute is sharp, obtuse is dull.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to grind down an obtuse blade to be very thin, that takes hours
mm-hmm.
when you're doing it by hand. So thin knife.
Okay.
Yeah, become a student of sharpness.
15 minutes, maybe, if you have a...
Yeah, if it's
thin. If you have the right...
Yes, if it's a right thin knife, you could do that in 15 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, a chain hoist, you need a propane jet burner to heat the water.
For the water.
Yeah. Yes, wood is funky and fun, but it also takes forever to get hot.
And you're going to... It would be real too hard to regulate the temperature.
Yeah, basically, if you're doing it with wood, you wait till the temperature's perfect, then you go shoot the pig and drag it over and dunk immediately, you know. But if you have a burner, you have a little more flexibility.
Okay.
Propane jet burner. It'll heat a 55-gallon drum, 2/3 full, in 20 minutes. So okay. It's real quick.
Yeah.
And then you want some cutting boards, sharp knives, we said, and it's hard to underestimate the use you'll get out of bus tubs. So like at restaurants, those plastic busing tubs, they're non-reactive, so you can cure things in them. And you'll be shocked at how many lugs, you know, you need the ability to lug meat around. So get like 6 of those. They're not expensive.
Okay.
Yeah.
What size knife? Like
the sharp size. I don't.
The length shouldn't matter.
It almost doesn't matter. Really? I mean, really, sharpness is so important that I would rather slaughter skin a cow with a sharp paring knife than with a dull beef skinner, you know, that's designed for that purpose.
Right.
So usually, that being said, you know, around 6 or 7 inches. You can do everything with that.
Okay.
Absolutely everything with a 6 or 7 inch knife.
And if a pig is 100 pounds, how heavy, what's the total weight of the meat? Like if you do it all really well, efficiently, you know, you're not leaving extra stuff on the bone.
Right.
How much meat do you,
So what is the hanging weight? If you scald and scrape the pig, as opposed to skinning, because that throws it all off. If you scald and scrape it and you clean the head and the trotters and everything's beautiful, which is what we're going to do tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
If the pig is 100 pounds alive, you'll have like 75 pounds of hanging weight.
You will?
Yes.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Because pig has a small gut package.
Wow.
Right? It's not half the weight of the living pig.
Uh-huh.
Like it is with a ruminant. So, yeah, pig is a high-yield animal, especially
That's
if you
incredible.
Don't skin them. Yeah.
So, that will include some bones?
Yes. All of them. Includes all of them.
Okay, I see.
Because you use the bones. Yeah.
Gotcha.
You make your broth.
So, that's basically minus the skin and the blood.
Not even the skin. Well... You'll see.
Some of the skin, maybe.
Yeah, which has no weight.
Epidermis.
Yeah, minus the hair, basically, and the pigmented layer of skin. Yeah.
Okay.
It's very high yield.
Gotcha.
And then the way you cut it, you don't have to trim anything. So I'll show you how we cut it tomorrow to make 100% yield. There is no, this isn't so good, we'll throw that out.
Uh-huh.
There's none of that. It's all good stuff.
I'm so excited.
I'm
all right.
Pumped. Okay, let's talk about smoking really fast.
Yes,
I love smoking. I love smoking briskets.
Why don't you ask him your question before we do the smoking?
Okay, I can do that.
Because, you know, we're still talking about the butchering, you know.
The bacon.
It makes sense to fit it in here.
This is a serious question. This is something that I've been trying my best to find somebody who knows the answer to this.
And you asked Dr. Cutterback, and he just shot you down.
He shot me down. He knows the answer, too. That's the thing. He knew the answer, and he refused to tell me.
That was the closest I'd ever come to fighting one of our guests.
I was just like, are you kidding me? Okay, so with bacon, when we're talking about bacon, we're talking about delicious, thick-cut, peppered, fried bacon.
Yeah, because some of you get excited about bacon, and then you realize, I can see through this bacon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like paper thin.
Before you cook it,
It's like, that's not the way to do it. So, so when we're talking about thick cut bacon, there has to be a principle of diminishing returns where you get to a point where it's too thick, and then it becomes like a ham steak.
Yeah.
So
maybe a little chewy.
And maybe, chewy.
Yeah.
Yes. So I don't know where the moment is of... This is a delicious, thick-cut piece of bacon we're now too chewy, and this is now a steak. I need a knife.
Yeah.
So is it like an eighth of an inch? Is it a quarter inch? Is it half inch? Where is that moment? Where is it? What are we talking about?
Well, are you making your own bacon? Is this the context you're talking about? Depends on the bacon you're using. That's why I'm asking. The bacon you're slicing.
Okay, the quality of the pig itself.
So let's talk about...
The quality of the cure.
Both. Yeah, really quick, because I can't do that all the time.
Right. Yeah,
so if I'm going to
go to the butcher shop, you know, you go to the grocery store and there's the dude back there and he'll cut stuff for you.
You have that here. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you can find that here. Okay. And he's like, all right, well, how thick do you want your bacon?
Yeah, what would you like? Yeah.
Interesting.
So what do I tell him?
Yeah, so that guy, that's tricky. Because it depends on the bacon he's cutting. Some of it is probably already cooked. Even though you're going to fry it up at home, it's already been cooked.
Really?
Yes. And some of it is just dry cured like I described, which makes a different texture entirely. Some of it has been smoked for a long period, so the bacon is dry on the surface, which means it will be chewy if you slice it thick. Some of it has been brined, so it's saturated and it's squishy and it can be cut real thickly and still won't be chewy.
Okay.
So it's bacon to bacon. Unfortunately, there is no, it really depends on the slab. So if you are going to make the bacon that I will show you how to make tomorrow,
right,
which is bacon with integrity.
Yes.
Meaning it will never spoil ever, right?
Okay.
And it will taste delicious. Uh-huh. The reason it doesn't spoil is again, because it has that water removed. And so dryness is this thing that is what is preventing the rot from happening. And what that creates, especially the longer it hangs, is a drier bacon. And the ultimate example of that is jerky, right? Jerky is super dry. I mean, traditionally, the only way that's cured is you take lean pieces of meat and you just hang them in the sun. They're just dehumidified. They're dried out. You don't even have to salt them for that.
Mm-hmm.
And jerky is chewy.
Yeah.
So the top layer of meat on your belly will be that consistency the longer that belly hangs in your kitchen. So I slice my bacon with regards to its thickness, judging by the age of the slab and how long it's been hanging in my kitchen, how hard it is when you hold it. Like, after you hang a belly for even just a month in your kitchen, it'll be solid. You know, you would have to really try to bend it. Hmm. So that one, when it's drier, you want it to be sliced thinner because it will be more chewy. And then it's also the way you cook it is important. You only flip it, try to flip it, not too many times. Basically, if you have curls of the fat, you know how the fat curls in that inviting manner?
Yeah.
If some of the peaks are still look very raw to you, it's good. Don't overcook dry bacon.
Okay. How do you feel about then bacon presses?
I've never used one. Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know. That might be kind of nice. I like to see things that I'm cooking, and it's like, I'd be checking the bacon all the time. Because overcooking the bacon is like,
it's
horrible.
Black, it's black. Yeah. And I agree.
Especially in your case where it's like, look, I fed that pig for a year.
Yeah.
And you overcooked it.
Yeah.
I fed it.
I
slaughtered it. I butchered it.
Uh-huh.
I cured it. And then you forgot what you were doing for 20 seconds and you ruined it.
Yeah.
So basically, I didn't get a definitive answer. The answer is there is not a definitive answer.
It depends on the quality of the belly and how it was cured.
Okay.
So, but again, the stuff that I'm going to show you how to make, you know, once you hang it in your kitchen, after it has been on the salt, after you've done a little cold smoke on it, so it's been on the salt for, let's just say, 5 days, and then you do a cold smoke for like 2 days. So it's still a young bacon. That bacon you can cut pretty thick. And it's not going to be chewy.
Like,
do you have to
when
cure
you say
it?
Pretty thick. Are you talking about like half inch?
You could do a quarter inch.
Quarter inch? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Could you just butcher it and take it into your kitchen and cook it up? Would that be okay?
It would. That would just be a fresh belly. Yeah. It would be great. It might be a little chewy. It won't taste like bacon at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. You're talking about just taking it off the pig.
Yeah.
And so it hasn't been salted. It's not cured. It's just, it'll taste like fresh pork. So it'll be good, but it won't taste like bacon. Yeah.
Can they make other parts of the pig taste like bacon?
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
Why are they not doing that?
Yes. Traditionally, all of the word for...
That's what you meant earlier when you said the recipe is the same.
It's the same.
That's what you meant.
Meat is meat, water is water, salt is salt, smoke is smoke.
Okay.
Apply it all in the right proportions to any part of the skeletal muscle, skin, and fat of a pig.
Oh, my goodness.
You will get this thing called bacon. Today, bacon means pre-sliced breakfast rashers. That's what that word means today. That's not what it used to mean. Bacon was synonymous with pork in the English language. Bacon is a British product. Bacon is an English word. It's not pancetta. You know how we imported a lot of Italian ones. Bacon is distinctly English.
Okay.
And the yield from a pig is bacon. They cured all of it. Because, again, they didn't have freezers. So you had to preserve all of it. The pork that you would eat fresh was only the spine and the spare ribs. And they called that pork. And you can read guides from that time, like the 1830s, where the author says, in a guide on how to slaughter a pig and how to cure it and cook it, I don't recommend that you eat pork. And what he means is, no fresh pork. Why would you eat fresh? It's a waste. It makes it dulls the edge of husbandry and makes you a sluggard.
Wow. That is
dead serious.
So write that down. Right with that words. It dulls the edge of husbandry. That's it's a good line.
That would be William Cobbett. He's got a lot of those. But so bacon is pork. I mean, that is how it was all eaten. So you can take the chops. The British still have this to this day. They call it back bacon. You know, like what a pork chop looks like. Just pretend it's bacon.
Yeah.
And you slice it thin all the way along the loin. And you cure it the same way. It's wonderful.
Do you have a favorite cut of bacon?
I really like back bacon myself.
Yeah, okay.
I really like it. I mean, it's got a nice big piece of meat, and the pigs that I raise get really nice and fat, so it's got like 2 inches of back fat on it.
Okay.
So we're talking, it's a solid ration of
nice.
So really,
on your plate.
Yeah,
it sounds like we weren't even asking the right question.
Yeah, we
it's
weren't.
Not so much about how thick is the bacon, but where should the bacon come from? The, you know, the ideal fat to meat ratio. Yeah.
Dude, here's the deal. We didn't know what we didn't even know.
I didn't realize.
Yeah, we had no idea. Okay, we don't have much time. I really want to get to smoking really fast.
Yeah, I do too. I just wanted to make sure we did that.
It's already noon.
Yeah.
So, okay. I love smoking. Yeah. Smoking is big here in Oklahoma, at least. You know, we're talking about briskets, we're talking about pork butts, we're talking about ribs, all sorts of different types of smoking, right? And I love smoking because probably similar to why you like your whole process, because it's this craft. It's like you're invested in time.
Yeah.
I like to tinker with all the airflow.
There's a ceremony.
You know, it's just like the prepping, the getting up at 2 a.m. so that way you can have a feast by dinner time. You know, like, you know, checking on the wood, making sure what kind of wood are you going to use, you know, what rubs, you know, all the processes of smoking I just absolutely love. One, because, again, you feel great about, you know, this is something that I've done. You've taken ownership in the meal.
Yeah, you worked hard for it.
You worked hard for it. But also you get to, like, hang out and drink beer and, like, enjoy the day.
Yeah,
and,
it's how creatures with immortal souls ought to prepare and eat food. I think it's rightly ordered.
Yes, very rightly ordered. So, but my problem is nowadays they have these smokers that take all the work out.
Yes.
How do you feel about these, like, Traeger grills and things like that are electric
all
smokers?
All the pellet smokers.
Where, like, the end is still a delicious piece of meat.
Right.
But you're no longer... They're taking the man part out of this.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
So, in my youth, in my amateurish zeal, I would have rejected it as a compromise of principle and a detraction on my character to have a Traeger grill. I still don't have one, but I did realize that it is not a zero-sum game. It's part of something you learn when you convert from Protestantism to Catholicism. There's less zero-sum games than you thought there were. And you could actually have a Traeger and a really rustic, awesome smoker. So that's my argument now.
Okay.
Just go ahead and...
I think that is a
go
good
ahead
balance
and get
answer.
Both because you have children. Like,
right.
Sorry, I'm out here working a smoker. Like, they're vomiting all over the house. Can you please? No, sorry, I'm adjusting the vent. Like, just get a Traeger, pop it in.
But the problem is, do
go
you ever go back? Like, you know, as human beings, like, I just know, like, once you figure out a way to, like, we don't use encyclopedias anymore.
Yeah,
we have the Google. Like, why do I need an encyclopedia? I have Google.
You said the Google. That's an old person thing to do.
Google.
Yeah. We have the Google.
We have the Google that'll, like, tell us everything. You know?
I was looking at the Google the other day.
But so, I mean, I'm saying that to say, like, I'm worried that if I did go to that, that I would never talk myself into being able to going back because it's like, well, I don't need that any longer.
Yeah.
That's my concern.
Yeah. I get that. And I understand that. I think that what you would find is that because you have more control and manipulation over the smoke of your rustic setup, you know, you actually can create something that tastes better. It'll be a little bit better. the quality will actually be enhanced because it is more an expression of your intelligent input than the trigger, which does not have intelligence.
Right.
And so,
assuming you have the skill.
Yeah, and it's something you develop. So I think it's good to start with the rustic stuff and like really dial it and acquire a skill. And then you are qualified to let a machine do it passively for you and do submission to the proper rustic smoker.
But I do. I think that's the correct answer is that, yes, you can have a Traeger grill. You're not, you don't have to be ashamed of yourself, you know, from a purist standpoint.
Yes. And here's the thing, like the ease, making bacon is a virtue. Like we need,
let's do this. Yes.
We need Dr. Meloche to give us to give us an outline of the virtue of making bacon. Right. From a Thomistic perspective, because I know we could.
Oh, we definitely could.
But it is actually a discipline, you know, like you don't notice it is because you're impassioned about it. You're zealous and you love it. But then, you know, keep going. Keep curing your own bacon. Keep doing it on a matter of principle. And it becomes a different game. It actually means that you are, that's what the process of acquiring a taste is, actually eating your own bacon. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tell people it's easier to make your bacon than it is to eat it.
That's not for me.
I know. I know it sounds crazy.
It does sound crazy.
I know. I know. But you, the yield of a pig is so huge. You're going to have 30 pounds
I see.
Of bacon. And if you're going to hang it in your kitchen, because by principle, you're going to eschew the freezer, right? Because you want to make this bacon with integrity. I dare say, you are going to get a little sick of bacon. Because you're going to, especially if you're limiting yourself and not buying any other meat, right?
Right.
And you're just going to eat the meat from your pig until it's gone.
Yeah.
There are going to be times when you're going to have bacon with a side of bacon with a piece of bread crust. And that's the meal every day. And so good motivation to make excellent bacon, but also realize that like it is this is how we shoulder the burden of abundance. And the pig is this amazing yield of so much food. It is actually burdensome because it is such a great gift.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to this just so I can write down all of these one-liners that you're saying, like the burden of abundance and just so many. There's so many concepts in this whole process. So foreign to most people, I think.
So harvesting a pig will do it, man.
Okay. Before we go.
Yeah.
What is like the one thing that you have learned that surprised you the most once you have like adopted this lifestyle, so to speak? I mean, it's not necessarily about the lifestyle. It's really about the activity.
Yeah.
But I can get like, I can almost romanticize this idea of like what you do. And it's like, yes, this is something that like I would love to do.
Yeah.
And I think what you were also trying to say is like, you know, if we can have this idea of romanticizing, but not, it's not always that way.
I was just curious, what is like the lesson or, you know, insight into God's wonder, whatever it is that like surprised you the most?
Okay. And then my question.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to say. I think they're both kind of related though, because it is, I'm definitely way beyond the amateur zeal because I've killed thousands of pigs. Many for my own household. Mm-hmm. And it is toil. It is hard work.
Uh-huh.
And so it is now a matter of discipline to make the perfect bacon. Whereas it's sort of like if you're working all buzzed up on coffee, as opposed to working under your own motivation, you know, without any caffeine that day for whatever reason. And that's when you know what you love. You prove it by doing it when you hate it, when you're exhausted and tired.
When you want to cut corners.
It's like prayer life.
Exactly.
That's your prayer life.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel
sometimes it's your marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You keep doing it.
You just keep doing it because you love it.
That's right. And you prove your love for it. And so what that means is you cannot use your emotions or your passions as a metric for whether or not you should be making bacon at home. Or, you know, whatever the thing may be. Because those will come and go. Those are unreliable sources. You just need to, if you believe it's the right thing to do, you should probably do it as a discipline.
Brandon, where can people find you?
FarmsteadMeatsmith.com is our website. And that is the gateway to sign up for our membership, where we go through curing and preparing all the things from all kinds of animals, beef and lamb and poultry and duck and everything, updated monthly. So you can also go to our website, farmstiffmeatsmith.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Sweet.
Sweet. Brandon, thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise.
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I hope you've enjoyed listening to some of my podcasts here at Breadbox Media. But today I'm speaking to you about a different opportunity. In September 2020, I'll be leading a fantastic pilgrimage cruise from Rome to the Holy Land, and then on the way back, stopping at the cities of St. Paul, Ephesus, Athens, Corinth, and more. While we're at sea, I'll be lecturing on the Gospels, history, or mystery. When we're on land, I'll invite you to join me as we visit all of the holy sites, celebrating Mass, worshiping together, and having a wonderful time of fellowship. If you'd like to know more about this pilgrimage cruise, go to my website, dwightlongenecker.com. Go to the right sidebar, and you'll see a picture there, which invites you to get more information. Go to my website, dwightlongenecker.com, right sidebar, click on the picture of the cruise ship, and you'll get all the information you need. Alternatively, you can call the company that's organizing the tour at 800-247-0017. 800-247-0017. Ask for Farmer Longenecker's Cruise to the Holy Land. Thanks for listening.
Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.